Eugenia Cheng sees a lot more than numbers and equations when she looks at the world of math. Cheng is the famed scientist in residence at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, where she teaches math to art students. That has given her a unique view on why some people have a math phobia and how to break through it. During a recent stop at Illinois State University, Cheng spoke to WGLT student reporter Tiffany Jackson about her own identity. She grew up in the UK, the daughter of immigrants from Hong Kong, surrounded by white people in rural England.
It definitely gave me an understanding of what it's like to be different. And I think that really helped me because I'm so often in a minority in many rooms that I'm in. So I'm a woman in a very male-dominated field. But I never really was too bothered by that when I was younger. Of course, now we talk about these things a lot more and we emphasize them, so I think about it. But at the time, I think I was used to being the odd one out a lot of the time. And I think that there are two ways you can respond to, well, many ways, but some people try desperately to fit in. But I think that I didn't. And so I was sort of used to sticking out. So I had a great education. I was very lucky. It was quite idyllic and quiet. And now I live in a very different place in Chicago, which is so different from the little village that I grew up in.
When it comes to pursuing a passion, everybody has that aha moment where they say, okay, I want to pursue this. This is my area of interest. So what was yours?
You know, I was so young. I've loved math and music since I was so young. I don't really exactly remember one specific aha moment. But what I do remember is a moment when I was about 16 and I was deciding what to do at university. Because in the UK, you have to decide really early what subject to study. And I had always thought I was going to study math. And then I had this really great piano lesson. I thought, oh, maybe I want to do music. And I thought about it for maybe all of 15 minutes. and I thought, you know, it's just that math seemed to me a better foundation for having a decent career in future. And that's not to say that you can't have a decent career in music, but I feel like there's a much bigger drop-off, that you're either the greatest pianist in the world or you're kind of really struggling. Whereas with math, you don't have to be the really greatest. There are all sorts of other things you can do. And I knew I wasn't going to be the greatest pianist. I knew I wasn't going to be the greatest mathematician either, but it just seemed that there were more things that I could do and that I could carry on playing the piano, which I do. Whereas making a living from playing the piano and then doing math on the side seemed pretty implausible as an option. So I'm glad I made that choice, and I'm glad that I stuck to it, because when I was young, I believed that I could do many things as an adult. And then I got a bit older, and then I learned the supposed common wisdom that you have to focus and you have to concentrate on one thing. And I didn't like concentrating on one thing. And so now I've gone back to doing many things and I'm much happier.
Do you think math phobia is a real thing? And if so, is there a certain group of people who are more affected by it?
I do think math phobia is a real thing. And I think it's some people like to call it math trauma. And I think that's a good thing to think about because it comes from experiences. I don't think anyone is born with math phobia. In fact, I've done a lot of work in elementary schools and 5 and 6 year olds. I've never really seen any math phobia in 5 and 6 year olds. You know, the teacher says that we're going to do math and everyone goes, yay, gets really excited because they haven't been traumatized yet. And yet somehow between there and adulthood, some people do okay and some people get traumatized. And I think it's partly to do with the things that the children like doing and to also how it's presented. So if it's presented in a way that's all about right and wrong answers, then inevitably children who don't get so many of the right answers will start feeling bad about themselves because no one likes being told they're wrong. And then those children are likely to drift towards subjects where you can't be wrong, like writing or drawing or painting or dancing or playing music or something. Whereas children who tend to get the right answer are much more likely to go, oh, I like this, and then keep going until a point where they stop getting the right answer. So people tell me often that they were okay with math until, and then something happened, and then they were quite good at it, and then they couldn't do it anymore, and then they started hating it. So I think that happens quite often, which is a real shame, because I think, honestly, that math in the end is not just about getting the right answer. It's about exploring and imagining different possible answers. And that seems to get lost, unfortunately.
So what turns people off about math? You know, many girls and women of color especially, they say that they don't like it. Why do you think that is?
It's many reasons. And some of it is to do with stereotype threat. So, of course, Asians do not have the same kind of stereotype threat. Asians have the opposite, which is everyone assuming that they're going to be good at math, which is also dehumanizing, but it's not nearly as bad as the assumption that you won't be able to do it. And if someone assumes you won't be able to do it, then certain types of people will go, right, I'll show you, I can do it. And other types of people will go, oh, well, I won't do it then. And I think that in my experience, many girls are more likely to go, okay, well, I won't try. And many more boys are likely to go, right, I'm going to show you. And I think that that's a real problem. And it shows that telling people in advance what you think they can and can't do is a very destructive idea. And sometimes people talk about imposter syndrome, where some people think that, you know, they don't deserve to be here. And I think that we should focus not just on imposter syndrome, but the fact that people sometimes, especially women and women of color, have actually been told that they don't deserve to be there. They're not imagining it in their head. It's people actually telling them. And I don't think that's the same as imposter syndrome. And I meet many girls, unfortunately, who of color, who say that maybe their parents don't think that they're very good at math, or that their dad told them that they'll never be able to do it. And that makes me really sad, because quite often they take on that belief. And so I think that it's really important, especially as parents and educators, not to say those kinds of things. And sometimes it's not that. Sometimes it's that parents say that they're not good at math. And often it's mothers saying, oh, well, I'm no good at math. And that's almost like giving permission to not be good at math, or even to make it cool. Because young children especially often, you know, of course older children want to do opposite things from their parents, but young children see what their parents are doing and often want to do those things. And so if their parents go, oh, well, I'm no good at math, then the child is much more likely to go, oh, it doesn't matter then, I don't have to do this.
So how did you become interested in this issue, the accessibility of math?
I've always been interested in the accessibility of everything through education. And I think that my piano teacher really instilled in me the belief that education is really important, and that if you know something, it's really important to share it. And that comes from a general belief that if you have something and you're fortunate, then it's really important to share that with people who are less fortunate. And I found math fairly straightforward at school, and I always felt that it was my responsibility, therefore, to help other people who were struggling. And I think that's where it started, the idea that we should help people who are struggling, not just go, oh, well, you're no good at math. And it makes me sad when people don't like math or think that math isn't for them, because I love it so much. And so I want to share that with as many people as possible. And also, I do believe that education is a really amazing force for social justice, which I care about a lot. And I know that I had great advantages in life starting out. Many people have more advantages, but many people had fewer advantages. And so I want to recognize that and make good use of it. And I was taught in my education that we'd been given advantages in life, and that it was really important for us to do something worthwhile with that. And that's why I feel that it's important to bring that to more people, because that shouldn't be something that's only available to some people. That should be available to all people. And I especially think that math is a really amazingly empowering thing. One of the reasons that I think I'm a confident woman is that I'm a mathematician. And just knowing that I can do math, it kind of gives me an extra piece of confidence. And that because math can open so many doors, I think it's a really amazing... You don't have to buy loads of expensive equipment to be able to do math. And so I think that it can be a really powerful force for social justice to help people raise themselves up or make progress through the unfortunately oppressive forces of society.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Tiffany Jackson. I'm in the studio with Dr. Eugenia Chen, who is a mathematician aiming to rid the world of math phobia. So your first popular book, How to Bake Pie, was published back in 2015. Could you tell us a little bit about that and what inspired you to write the book?
That book, in a way, was my dream of a textbook for a liberal arts math course that I never thought I would have a chance to teach. And I had spent years talking to non-mathematicians about my research, because I love talking to people, and I love talking to people who do all sorts of things, and I love talking about the things I'm passionate about, including my research. Of course, it's quite difficult to talk about your research, math research, to non-mathematicians. So I found all sorts of ways of talking about it by analogy and by telling stories. And this turned into that book. And I never thought that I would get to teach it, But now I do, because I had the amazing opportunity to teach it to art students. And once I had a chance to teach a liberal arts math course to art students, I thought, wow, I've already written the textbook in advance. So that's how that book came about.
So do you think being a mathematical thinker changes the way you think about other problems or things in life? Do you apply that same skill set to your personal or social life?
Yes, I do think that being trained in mathematical thinking affects how I think about everything. It means that I've always got that basis. It doesn't mean I'm thinking about math all the time, but it's like a philosophy or an ideology, a way of thinking to get to the heart of things and find clarity about situations. And that's really what my last book, The Art of Logic, was about, because I realized I was using mathematical thinking to understand political arguments, and that it was helping me understand the political arguments more than I could see being generally done in a widespread way. Because there's a lot of horror, understandably, there's a lot of horror about what other people think these days, but there's horror from all sides about what other people think. So we may be horrified about what someone else thinks, and they're equally horrified about what we think. But when I see those arguments going on, I can always understand what everyone thinks. And I feel that it's actually mathematical analysis and the discipline of mathematical thinking and abstraction that helps me do that. And I was almost quite surprised by that myself. But then I realized that it's from that discipline that I've been so trained in, and that it was way more widely applicable than even I thought. Because there's an idea that math is all about numbers and equations, and that it's useful for science and engineering and things. And I always thought my research had a very long knock-on effect, that eventually it would be useful to society, but in a really long time. And then I realized that actually it was useful to me now in just understanding other people.
So there is a strand of politics that is very anti-intellectual, anti-liberal elite, the Sarah Palin type versus the Barack Obama type. Mm-hmm. As someone who lives in this world, what do you make of that? Does that trouble you?
It does trouble me. And I think the important thing to do is understand it rather than immediately declaring that the other people are wrong. So it's clear which part side of that I fall into. And I think it's important to understand why some people are very skeptical about college and about intellectuals, because there does seem to be a large degree of agreement among certain groups of intellectual. But that doesn't mean that it's a conspiracy, and it doesn't mean that people are just brainwashing. It means that we have a framework for how to agree about things, and that the framework is working. And the fact that we have failed to convince everyone of that, I think, shows that education is failing. That if, for example, some people grow up thinking that scientists only agree with each other because of a conspiracy, that's a real problem, and that we as educators need to do better.
That's mathematician, pianist, and teacher Eugenia Chang speaking with WGLT student reporter Tiffany Jackson.